Hi, I'm Sue. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict.
Hi, Sue. Welcome.
And I am honored to be here tonight to share my story. I'm hoping as my talk progresses, you'll understand a little bit about why the month of April was so important to me. But I want to start back with, I have been a sugar addict since I was a very small child. And one of the things that came out in my fourth step was, as a small child, probably first or second grade, I was going to Dolly Madison and I was stealing candy. And I was taking it and hiding it. And the other thing, my mother had a beautiful crystal jar in the window of our dining room, which she kept the paperboy money back in the days when the paperboy was like a quarter. And she had a jar of money there. And I would steal money out of that jar to be able to go and get candy. Because even as a small child, I could not get enough. When I was 10 years old, because I was large for my age, as I go back and I look at pictures, I stood about 8 inches over the tallest boy in like third and fourth grade. So I thought I was huge, and obviously so did all of the other little kids around there. And as we know, kids can be really cruel. And my mother had tremendous body image issues and her own shame issues around her body, and put me on my first diet when I was 10 years old. And I have a copy of that diet. It was 800 calories a day. And it would have been in the 70s, I was also prescribed Ionomin, which is an amphetamine. And then I would get too hyped up on Ionomin, so by the time I got to junior high, I was taking Ionomin in the morning to get hyped up, and then they were giving me Valium at night to quiet me down. Now, this never actually had an effect. I mean, I would yo-yo my weight, but I see now that it was actually the beginning of a long history of really bad shame about my own body, and that I was very inadequate, and that carried forward to me through junior high and high school. And when I went off, well, I went through a time of rebellion in junior high. My father was a law enforcement officer, and I decided I needed to rebel. And I was doing things like joyriding and stealing cars when I was 15. By the grace of God, I never got caught doing that. I did get caught shoplifting once, and you would have thought I had actually killed someone by the way my father reacted to that. And my punishment was, one of the things that I had shoplifted was a little plaque. It had a little flower and a little saying on it, and he made me hang it on the wall in my bedroom to remind me of how horrible I was to take that. And that hung on the wall in that room for probably 15 or 20 years before I finally went in there one day and, saying a bunch of expletive words, took it off and destroyed it. So that was my teenage years. I was rebellious as all get out. Experimented with a lot of drugs and alcohol, and did anything I could at that point to kill the pain that had started to develop in the early years of my life. Fast forward to college, and I had lived under very tight constraints in my parents' home. So when I got to the freedom of college, I could not stop partying. It was free rein to eat, drink, smoke, everything that I never felt I was free to do growing up. I took advantage of my first quarter at UNC, and my GPA that first quarter almost doesn't register on a calculator, and it was a really, really bad time for me. But what I realized was, it was time for me to start figuring out who I was, and I just didn't have any idea. No idea at all who I was. So instead of going and actually getting help or any of those things, I just started drinking and eating more. And when I graduated from college, I was probably at roughly 200, 220 pounds. And I got a 4-year degree. I have a degree in psychology, and I really wanted to help people. Recently, I came across a letter that I had written to my parents when I was in college, when I changed my major from business to psychology. and trying to explain to them what I was doing. And I saw my heart, I just wanted to help people. I didn't want a business degree. I don't have a business mind. And I just continued to numb the pain during that time. I came home from college, and one day my dad came home from work and said they were hiring where he worked. And I walked in the back door of a sheriff's office. Never polygraphed, never applied, none of those things. And just went to work with him one day to take a part-time temporary position. And I stayed for 26 years. And just last April, finally walked away from that job. That job became my life. I met somebody at the sheriff's office who I ended up marrying and have since divorced, and continued my partying lifestyle. And that was all we did. We basically had chairs set up at TGI Fridays, and we would walk in there six nights a week, and we would eat and drink to oblivion. And in those days when I was married, I had a pretty active social life, but it was all tied around that. And the more that progressed, the more my eating and drinking and my weight went up. And then what I realized at the end of my marriage, I always believed that my ex-husband was the alcoholic, and I've come to actually change my mind about that. But that's another program and another story. And when I divorced him, I stopped drinking the same way I had and turned primarily to food. Food was my comfort. Sugar, food, anything I could get my hands on. An average day in my life, for probably the last 15 years of my career, would be getting up and going to work in the morning, not eating anything until 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, driving through something for lunch, then working until 6 or 7 o'clock at night and driving through and finding something to eat and drink, taking home in front of my television set and going into oblivion. And that was my life. And the last few years, that was all I did. I had isolated, as it talks about in the big book, isolated, detached, and withdrew. I had very, very few friends. I had very little social life, very little interaction. Really, all I wanted to do, I was giving my life to my job and to my food. And on August of 2009, we had a very large inspection at the sheriff's office. And it was my job to actually pass this inspection. I was the manager of the program that was being inspected. And the sheriff had set a goal of getting a really high level score on this. And I worked my ass off the best I could, given my disease state at that point. And although we passed the inspection, we did not pass at the level that got us the award that he was seeking. And they left town on a Wednesday, and I started a six-week, quote, vacation at that time. On the following Tuesday, I thought I had bronchitis. I went to the doctor, and I thought he was going to do a chest x-ray and give me an antibiotic and maybe an inhaler and send me happily on my way. But instead, he took the chest x-ray, and he looked at me and he said, "Your heart's enlarged. There's something that doesn't look right. I don't think this is a good sign. You need to go directly to the emergency room." And I have a phenomenal denial system. I would hold it up against any denial system of anyone, anywhere. Because he was telling me all of these things, and I just didn't think it was that bad. And quite frankly, he gave me the choice to either take an ambulance, or I could drive myself as long as I took oxygen with me, because my oxygen level was really low. And I didn't think it was that bad, so I'm like, well, give me the oxygen, I'll drive from Kaiser on Arapahoe over to St. Joe's. And guess where I stopped along the way? At Arby's, at a fast food restaurant. And what I did, because I hadn't eaten that day, I wanted some comfort, I needed to do something. And I went to the hospital, and before the night was over, I was in ICU. I had what's called a pericardial effusion. I had basically the lining around my heart was infected. And they thought my heart could stop at any given moment. And he, the cardiologist that was on duty, walked into the ER that night and said, "Do I have your permission to restart your heart if it stops?" Well, I'm thinking long-term, heroic efforts. You know, I have a living will. I don't want... And I'm like, no. And he looked at me and he said, "Ma'am, you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm not sure your heart can take what's happening." And even then, I was scared to death. I didn't... The denial kicked in. I mean, it was not the intensity. It wasn't that I was scared to death at that point. That actually hit a few days later when the gravity set in. But that first night, I didn't think it was that bad. By the grace of God, they left me in the hospital for 5 days. They did not have to do the surgical procedure they kept threatening to do to remove the fluid from around my heart. My body healed itself. Part of it was being away from work all of those weeks, getting out away from that stress. That was September 1st. On October 2nd, I was at what the time was my regular OA meeting, and I was talking to my sponsor. And I said, you know, because when I was in the hospital, they were telling me, oh, a little bit of sugar won't hurt you. The actual, like, registered dietitians were like, oh, a little bit of sugar is okay. So I spent the month of September playing in the sugar. And I was talking to my sponsor, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to figure out what food plan I should get on and how much sugar I can eat. And I looked at her, and I said, unless, of course, I'm mind-fucking myself. And the minute I heard myself say that, she didn't act, react, say anything, but I knew that was exactly what I was doing. And I went home the next day and I prayed. And I'm like, okay, God, I can't do this anymore. Help me. Help me find what I need to do. And I found a food plan that gave up the sugar. And on October 4th, and I specifically picked October 4th as my original abstinence date, because in law enforcement, the code 10-4 means everything's going to be okay. And I knew I could hang on to that, that everything was going to be okay. So I got abstinent in October. The end of November, I went back to work. And I really thought that I could stay abstinent and stay working. Now, what I didn't realize is I have an addict brain, and I had taken away the sugar. So the alcohol came back. And after a few months in December, I was called into the boss's office. And they were demoting me because of what happened with the inspection. And that was actually what I consider two of three cosmic 2x4s that happened to me to actually straighten my life out. The first was actually landing in the hospital. The second was getting demoted. They were going to pay me a tremendous amount of money to staple and highlight papers sitting in a cubicle. I went from working for a captain in charge of internal affairs to a sergeant in charge of staff inspections. And my pride and my ego was just leveled. I was devastated, but I was going to keep doing it. Financially, I had to. I didn't have a choice. I was so close to being able to take early retirement, and they knew it. So I kept going to work, and I kept going to work, and I kept going to work. And I was telling everybody I was just doing it for the money. You know, it was just a job. I was going to go in, do my 10 hours, and leave. And on March 5th, a really dear friend of mine's little brother died suddenly. He was 42 years old, and we had no idea that he was even ill, let alone he didn't make it through cardiac surgery, which hit really close to home for me. And I went in, and basically the short story is on April 8th, I walked away from a 26-year career. And I have spent the last year putting my recovery first, doing whatever I could do, going to multiple meetings a day, finding a really good sponsor. I mean, that's really the key to this for me, is finding someone that I could relate to. I've gone through a couple of sponsors because of some geographic changes in their lives and some professional changes, but I have a sponsor that I adore now, and somebody who understands me. worked my way through the steps. I've actually been through the steps twice now. I have a sponsor in my other program and have worked them a second time there. And today, although I still get shaky in my program sometimes, I would not and could not go back to the life that I had before. It literally almost killed me. And by the grace of God, in that time, I've been able to maintain a 50-pound weight loss. I had actually been down about 10 to 12 pounds more than where I'm at right now. And this last fall, when I was right at a year abstinent, I had some things happen in my life, and they knocked me off track. I did not lose my abstinence over by the grace of God. Abstinence is not mine. I'm not who keeps the sugar out of my mouth every day. That's not possible for me to do. But what happened was I started using food for comfort again, and my quantities went up, and I really had to start looking at where my food has been and why I've been unwilling to release some more of the weight compared to where I'm at now. I would like to continue going down, but I also know that that's not up to me, and my sponsor reminds me this is a spiritual program, and I need to, my weight is none of my business, which really is hard for me to accept sometimes. But I've seen it work for others, where when I let my spiritual program work and I trust in my higher power, then I don't need the food in the way that I was. And I was so grateful when Amy asked me to speak, because it's made me really look at my program and look at where I am today and where things stand. And believe me, it is nowhere near perfect. But this month, on April 4th, I had 18 months of abstinence. On April 8th, I had a year away from the sheriff's office. On April 10th, I turned 50 years old. And this coming Monday, the 18th, God willing, I'll have a year of sobriety. And it's been a roller coaster last few weeks. I've been hanging on to my friends quite dearly. Everybody keeps reminding me it's just 24 hours at a time. It's just for today. I'm not doing it. I've had some amazing spiritual experiences, just up to and including very recently. And I see that my life is really God's. It's not anything of my doing. It's not my ego and my pride. I had to have that completely flattened. I've learned the difference between humility and humiliation. And I hope, as humbly as I can say this, that my story can help somebody else. That's what my goal is. The business that I'm building now for my future is to reach back and help other people. And those are what I want to do with my life now. I want to go back to that letter I was talking about, where I was telling my parents I really wanted to help people. And I got off track. I stayed in that job out of fear. And today, as long as I let God take over, the fear lessens. And I reach out and I let other people help me. It's a totally, totally different life. And I am just so very, very grateful that I'm here, and I'm honored that I got a chance to come tonight and share my story. So thank you.
Thank you, Susan.